Hello and welcome to SNL Energy's podcast. I'm Senior Editor Jennifer Zajac, and with me today is Ken Westrick. He is founder and CEO of 3Tier. Based in Seattle, 3Tier is a global provider of renewable energy information services. That includes wind, solar, and hydro energy assessment and power forecasting. 3Tier helps developers, financiers, and governments around the world make decisions about renewable energy projects from the prospecting stage to operations. Today we're going to be talking with Ken about some of the problems that wind farms have been encountering across the U.S. There have been more stories in the mainstream about how wind farms are not producing as expected. Ken, you've been covering this space for quite a while. I wanted to start off by asking you, one of the things we're hearing is that El Nino is to blame for all this. Is that accurate to say that El Nino is having an impact on wind farms?
Yeah, that's very accurate to say. In fact, I would even say that the problems are... they're not really problems with the wind farms per se. It's just the variability of the wind resource that's just inherent in the wind.
How much variability can be reasonably expected year to year when it comes to a wind project?
From what we've seen, it depends on where the project's located. But generally, you can see anything from a 5 to 10 point change in capacity factor, which, you know, anywhere, you know, 30 to 40% either over or under prediction, even at the annual scale, based on climate indicators like ENSO, like the El Nino Southern Oscillation.
Now, El Nino doesn't follow our calendar year, so how long has this been hitting us, and are you seeing unusually large swings this year?
Sure, because we are in, when you're in an El Nino or a La Nina, you're kind of at the peaks of either the positive or negative phase of this cycle. So this is where you would see the greatest changes, either an overabundance of wind or an underperformance of wind, I guess, based on the strongest signal. So certainly in parts of the country, the winds have been much stronger, and other parts of the country have been much weaker. And we've really seen that peak in Q4 of 2009 and even into this year. But again, I would highlight that this is a natural phenomenon to see these oscillations like this. And they're going to happen this year, and they're going to happen in the future. The El Nino happens at about kind of the 3 to 5 year scale. That's the whole idea, is that this is an oscillation. And one of the things I would say is that 3Tier has capabilities and technologies to forecast and to assess the impacts of these climate swings, and even to some degree forecast these things be happening before they occur.
Ken, we've been reading and talking about global weirding. We've seen some severe weird storms this year. Is 3Tier taking that into consideration? Or are we seeing more of a climate change impact? And can we expect more strangeness to come in the next couple of years?
Sure. I mean, if you look at the climate change reports and read into the science, you'll see that what we're seeing this year is something that's expect climate change scenario. Now, while you can't attribute every single thing that happens to climate change, a lot of people say, well, is this snowstorm? Is this proof of climate change or the converse, proof that climate change is not occurring? It's not the one single event that signals that this is something from climate change. But it does, when you look at the aggregation of these events, you can start to try to say that this is the signal that we would see. And even going back 10 or even 15 years ago, with the climate change studies that were even done that long ago, we expected that there would be the frequency and the severity of storms, whether it's tropical storms or even snowstorms, would increase a climate change world.
Now, given all those fluctuations, Ken, I know we've got utility execs, Wall Street analysts listening to this. This might make them very jittery. It sounds like wind farms are going to be volatile as a result of the volatile weather. Is that the case?
Yeah, the volatility has always been there. And that's one thing that we've been, at 3Tier, we've been saying for a long time, is you need to really understand the variability of your fuel. It's amazing that there's the fundamental understanding of the variability of wind projects is, I think, underestimated in the industry. And it's best to go into building a wind project fully knowing the full variability. What kind of variability could you expect month for month and year to year from wind projects, and know that before you build that project? So if you are faced with 2 or 3 years where your project appears to be underperforming, it may not be underperforming. It just might be that we're in a low wind period and that you're not seeing that performance, and it's just a natural part of the cycle.
Is there any way to tell thus far, Ken, what might be just a, you know, a low wind phase versus, wow, this is a failed project?
That, I think that's the issue right now is when you say failed project, it's interesting you even talk about failure in a project or what is a failed project.
Right. How do you define that?
How do you define it? Well, to us, I would think a bank would say that, or an operator would say that a project that's not performing to the expectations of the pro formas that were put together before the project was built. And one thing I would say, and so this is this whole idea about going in and, first of all, having as low of a bias as, when I say bias, you want to make sure that you come up with an honest assessment and a very unbiased and objective assessment of what that true capacity factor is. And one thing I can tell you about weather and climate in general is we can never get that number to complete certainty. There's always going to be some uncertainty around that estimation of that capacity factor. And it's very important for you to understand that that uncertainty is there and we can never eliminate it, but we can reduce it. And that's the thing about putting more time and effort into your assessment phase and really understanding your fuel much more. I mean, we're talking small amounts of money here compared to the size of a project. It's really important for bankers, for operators, the owners to really understand that natural variability in the wind and the uncertainty around the estimations of that capacity factor.
Ken, tell me a little bit more about the assessment phase. Obviously, that is extremely critical to a wind project. What should developers, what should investors, what should utilities be looking for when this part of the research phase?
What we advocate at 3-Tier is kind of a cost-hedging approach to looking at site identification, prioritization, the due diligence design. Obviously, the greatest risk with the renewable energy projects is at the very first stages. You've got fuel risk, you've got technology risk, you've got a lot of different risks, you've got project site risks. And the amount of money that you want to put into the project in the initial stages, this is before the project's built, when you're still assessing whether you even want to do a project here, you want to start to prioritize those sites that have the lowest risks. And as you start to bring that big list of potential projects down a funnel, you want to make sure that you're bringing the least risky projects towards the diligence phase so that you're putting the most amount of your effort and time into projects that have the greatest possibility for success. And success means that it produces power when it's needed, that it's built in a location that, you know, has high reliability. And so that's the approach that we push at 3-Tier, that you go into this thing and you essentially go through the process of prospecting, prioritization, diligence, and design, and that you continually pare down what sites you're looking at and put your money and your resources towards those projects that are going to be the best projects that you could possibly build. And a lot of times, and one thing I will add to that, a little about wind, 3-Tier is technology agnostic. As you mentioned, we work across wind, solar, and hydro. There's tremendous opportunity for wind in the United States. That doesn't necessarily mean that it works everywhere. The only thing worse than not building wind projects or solar projects is building the wrong ones. And what we're trying to do at 3-Tier is continually to identify and make sure that we're building the right projects that people are happy with. And when I say happy, that they're hitting the revenue marks, performance characteristics that were expected when they put the projects together.
Talk to me more about lessons learned. Have there been wind projects where there were some red flags during the assessment phase that should have told people this should not have been built?
And that does come up quite a bit. And I have to be careful about this question. I would say that, yes, certainly there are projects that do move forward that should not be built, or at least they need more of an assessment to understand that uncertainty. And again, I think this goes back to prioritization of the projects that you're looking at and making, here's the thing that happens sometimes. And I'll just bring up something that we've seen a few different times happen in the U.S. and unfortunately more often abroad where maybe the people don't understand the process as much. One of the difficulties is again around the prioritization. And they will go in and they'll put a lot of instrumentations in a location very early on, dedicate a lot of time into that project, and then they will come to three-tier and will say something like, well, geez, that looks like a reasonable site, but just 12 miles away, here looks like a much better site. It's too bad you didn't put your observations there. And then they're in the quandary of trying to look at the other site to develop or trying to put worth a site that's probably not as high producing, but where they've dedicated a lot of their time and money. And we're trying to turn that process around so that you're identifying those best locations earlier on, so you don't have to run into these red flags, so that you are putting your money where it's best used.
Ken, you mentioned earlier that project is considered a success when it produces the power when you expect it and when you really need it. Senator Lamar Alexander said the wind blows at the Tennessee Valley Authority's Buffalo Mountain Wind Farm in Tennessee less than 20% of the time, quote, making the project a commercial failure. Now, that's not necessarily the case, correct?
You know, I don't know exactly about that specific project, but I can tell you that, first of all, that the thing that blows less than 20% of the time, I probably mean the 20% capacity factor. Well, it depends on the price of power. It depends on a lot of different things here. It all comes down to not necessarily what the capacity factor is. I mean, that's very important, but it's the capacity factor and the local price of power and when is that power available. So I wouldn't necessarily say that's a commercial failure. It's producing power, and if it's displacing power and if it's producing power when it's economical, then the project should be a success. If it's performing at the characteristics that made sense to build the project, then it could be a commercial success. You know, you can't just look at the capacity factor. You can imagine if the price of power in a certain region were 2 cents a kilowatt hour, and you had put a wind project in that maybe has a 55 or 60% capacity factor and could produce power at 4%, that may not necessarily be a good project. But if the price of power were 30 cents and this wind project only produced power at a 15% capacity factor, it still could be economical. So just looking at the capacity factor in isolation does not signify that the project is a success or a failure. You have to look at it in the context of what the price is and the power of that area and a lot of other factors.
Ken, we should point out that it's not just the wind that may impact a wind turbine's capacity. The wind turbine itself might not be operating as it should, correct? Can you talk a little about what's been happening with some wind turbines out there and what's being done to improve the technology?
It is an evolving industry. And, you know, the turbine manufacturer is always moving forward, improving designs. This happens in any industry. Cars are still getting better. I mean, they've been around for 100 years now. So, of course, turbines are continuing to get better. Turbulence on turbines, say the maintenance and the downtime for turbines, that constantly improves as the technologies improve. And those technologies improve, obviously, as we deploy more wind energy. So, yeah, turbulence, which may be associated with gearbox failures. I think that the responsible turbine manufacturers out there, and there are a lot of them here in the U.S. and abroad, are working on technologies to improve the reliability of wind turbines. Of course, that's an issue. It's an issue for almost any look at what's going on with Toyota right now. Everyone's working to improve their technology. That continues to march forward.
Now, we're not picking on wind here. We've just seen a lot of stories, like I said earlier, in the mainstream media about wind projects not necessarily living up to expectations. But, Ken, you cover all sorts of renewables, and this is not unique to the wind sector, correct?
No, you know, this is what we're seeing a lot of in this year is the effects of climate variability. Just the natural oscillations of the atmosphere in some areas are going to have higher winds and some areas are going to have lower wind. And so I don't think that's not a indicator that this is a failed technology or anything like that. It's just something that we have to deal with. I mean, hydropower has been around for hundreds of years. Some years we have low rainfall. And hydropower operators and dams continue to be built. We've learned how to work around that variability. And we'll do the same thing with wind and we'll do the same thing with solar. It's just an inherent process of the atmosphere that we have to account for before and before projects built and even during its operation. And that one of the, I think I'd like to point out is that when you're looking at this, it's important to be unbiased about the different technologies, the engineering analysis around that. Our job is really to look at that resource itself and provide an unbiased estimate of what the true capacity factor is, whether it's wind or solar or whatever it be. And we don't really have a vested interest in whether or not that particular project goes forward. I think our vested interest is to make sure that responsible projects go forward, because again, those projects that don't produce that as expected are going to be around for a long time to be a black eye in the industry, and we don't want to see those built. The U.S. is a great wind resource. Let's build the projects where they make sense.
Ken Westrick, founder and CEO of 3Tier, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Jennifer.
All right, and this has been another SNL Energy Podcast. I'm Jennifer Zajac. Thanks for listening.